In a black star-sprinkled sky, we soar backward over Earth. Massive block letters of gold and silver orbit into view. The continents show the speckled electrified glow of hundreds of cities. The Earth eclipses the sun, and a massive word hovers front and center. Universal, a Comcast company.
Parallel black tiles slide into a red background to form the E's in a logo that reads Bleecker Street. The letters fade away, leaving only the now shiny metallic tiles that disappear row by row. A blue flower morphs into a globe of the Earth, surrounded by four stylized M's, Meridian Entertainment. Simple white letters appear over a black background, symbolic exchange. A man with a briefcase crosses in front of stairs in a large, hard-surfaced room. Signs pointing up the stairs read, Taxis. An overlay of words drifts in. Anonymous content. The man becomes part of the A. A simple lamp stands in front of curtained windows in a neatly kept house. One toothbrush stands in a glass at the bathroom sink next to a hairbrush, a folded white towel, and a book of matches.
More than what it seems, that's all. Much more. People don't know because they're too busy with their game shows and football and silliness to take the time to look and read and figure it all out. Who is it that said, believe none of what you hear and half of what you see? These are interesting times we're living in. That's another saying, Chinese. Actually, it's a curse. All you have to do is look and learn to connect the dots and get ready. Did you know there's only 3 days worth of food in the stores? And on the SHTF, the 99% are going to be out of commission. I'm only telling you this because I wouldn't be a good father to you if I didn't let you know all the stuff that I know. It bears repeating, so I'm repeating it, so you can be prepared. It's only a matter of time, and it's not far off now. All you have to do is look around. You can see it if you open your eyes. The biggest problem we have isn't anything that a little focus couldn't cure. And it's not like it's so hard. There's tons of information out there if people just take the time to look. And if you think being busy with all that stuff you think is so important, well, you're going to learn that that's not what really matters. I mean, what really matters. All that's going to matter is what you do now. I'm not saying all this to scare you because I'm not scared, if that's what you think. No, I'm ready. I just want to be ready.
An older man sits on a recliner with a phone to his ear.
Nice talking with you, Dad.
Yeah, okay. Bye.
He hangs up his landline. The numbers on a clock radio change from 8:29 to 8:30. He shifts his recliner back. A title appears, The Tomorrow Man. The letters fade out one by one. In a market, the man, tall with receding gray hair, unloads his basket at a checkout station.
Maggie,
huh?
A cashier smiles at him.
You're new here.
Maggie scans his cans of tuna, a roll of paper towels, batteries, and disinfectant spray. The man puts on a pair of glasses, then takes out his checkbook.
And $22.56.
He writes a check.
It's always a good idea to know your neighbor. You never know when you might need him.
He hands Maggie the check.
Can I see your driver's license?
Ed Hemsler.
He hands her his ID. A field of corn sits under puffs of white clouds in a blue sky. At a gas station, Ed Hemsler stands next to his truck, filling a gas can. A black luxury sedan pulls to a stop in the adjacent stall. A man gets out. Ed taps the last drops out of the pump before glancing at the man, who offers him a friendly smile. Ed reacts with a not-so-friendly smile as a train passes nearby. Now Ed drives his large pickup truck down a two-lane highway past cornfields. Ed's truck zooms past a pair of windows. Inside, four empty chairs stand near an American flag, and some hangers sway on a coat rack. Ed pulls off the two-lane highway into a paved driveway. He stops under a carport in front of a house with green wood siding and brown shutters. Carrying the gas can and bag of goods from the market, Ed makes his way down a path along the side of the house. He pauses and stares across the highway at the fields beyond. Glancing around furtively as he rounds the corner to the back of the house, Ed proceeds to a nondescript section of wall. He sets down the gas can and bag and pulls something from his jacket pocket. Ed opens a door in the wall. A magnetic key sits to the panel nearest the opening. He picks up the gas can and bag and steps inside, leaving the door slightly ajar. Ed steps back outside, carrying the gas can and the folded-up bag in one hand. Scanning to the side, he magnetically sets the lock and pockets the key before heading away. Words are typed out on a screen. There's something very strange going on. A graphic of a finger-pointing hand clicks on a post-reply button. Ed stares at a computer monitor, then grabs a document coming out of a printer. As he files the page in a metal cabinet, the full message from Captain Reality can be seen. It doesn't take a genius to see there's something very strange going on. Responses to Ed's post come in. Nevertheless, helps to have a resident genius on call, preaching to the choir captain, and strange indeed. Ed types on his keyboard. Later, he eats steak in his underwear as he watches a brown-haired newscaster.
The governor, after taking time off from his vacation to thoroughly examine the proposed budget cuts, has asked for a 3-day period to allow his staff to assess the merits of the proposal and respond to what one official has termed petty obstructionism. Fortunately, Ed Hemsler has devised an innovative solution to our problems, allowing him the much-envied ability to sit around in his underwear as the world passes him by.
Ed lowers his eyes and grimaces. Now he sleeps in a fetal position. Ed's hand slams the alarm off. Now he wets his face at the bathroom sink. He blots a towel over his face and forehead. He grabs a pill bottle off a shelf and opens it. He stares thoughtfully at the two pills inside. Dumping a pill into his hand, he sips from a glass of water, then downs the medication. Later, Maggie scans items, including rubbing alcohol, two cans of tuna, moth crystals, and batteries.
Hi.
A bespectacled woman with long gray hair steps forward.
That'd be 950.
Okay. From the back of the line, Ed watches the woman pay with cash. She bags her things, then takes her change.
Thank you.
Ed continues to observe her as the woman shuffles out of the store. Later, he sits at his computer. As he moves the mouse, he frowns, then leans closer to the monitor. He pulls open a file drawer. He yanks out a black binder and flips through pages. His fingers move down a column of data.
Wrong. Wrong.
He sets down the binder and moves back to the computer desk. Removing his glasses, he glances downward with a look of concern. In the kitchen, Ed spreads mayo and slices a tomato. He makes a sandwich and cuts it diagonally. He eats while watching the brown-haired newscaster.
Other federal mandates affecting national government. Guard members. Governor Wilkinson said that he welcomed the changes, citing recent events as families gathered to honor the 17 people who died that terrible day. The governor added that he believed there was a growing hope and sense of purpose shared amongst Americans as we seek to find new ways to prevent tragedies like this from ever happening again. What's the matter, Ed?
Ed perks up.
Did I say something wrong?
He shakes his head slightly and turns off the TV. At the market, Ed pushes a cart to the end of an aisle, scanning left and right. He starts up the adjacent aisle where the bespectacled woman is shopping. Ed stops, casually glancing at a shelf as the woman passes by him. As she moves to the end of the aisle, Ed steers his gaze toward her. Now, carrying a basket, Ed approaches the checkout line where the woman is and begins unloading. He observes as she pays with cash again. Her hand rests on a can of lighter fluid.
Thank you.
He wears a puzzled look as he stares at her leaving. Maggie watches him.
Hi, Ed.
He quickly turns to her.
Maggie.
He gets back to unloading his basket. As a blue hatchback backs up in a reflection on the storefront glass, Ed steps up inside and sees the car. Later, he lies awake in bed. In slow motion, the bespectacled woman pulls her hair back over her ears. In bed, Ed swallows. Now the woman hands over cash in slow motion. Gazing off pensively, Ed closes his mouth. In slow motion, the woman mouths, "Thank you," to the cashier. Ed lies with unblinking eyes. Selecting a radio station, Ed sits in his truck eating sunflower seeds. He leans out his open window. Parked at the edge of the market lot, he sees the blue hatchback approaching and sits up. Dusting off his hands, he observes as the woman parks her car away from other vehicles. He starts his engine and watches as she walks toward the store. Later, the woman exits the market to find Ed's large pickup truck parked too close to her hatchback's driver's side. She scans around the parking lot. Carrying a grocery bag, Ed races over from the store and gets in his truck.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's my fault. Nah, I got you.
He backs his truck up across empty parking spots and stops. As the bespectacled woman opens her door, Ed pops back out.
Nice car.
He checks out the front of her car.
It's not a Ford. You like it?
Oh, yeah. It's good. On gas.
Oh, that's important. You never know when you're going to need some. You like coming here? Dan's, I mean. I see you here from time to time.
It's convenient.
Nice selection.
Her eyes follow his as he peers into her back seat.
So, have a nice day.
I'm Ed.
His shoulders heave and he frowns.
Ronnie.
Ronnie?
Ron.
That's a man's name. Ronnie what?
Meisner.
M-E-I. Hemsler. That's my last name. Ed Hemsler. Pleased to meet you.
They shake.
Ooh. Okay. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Have a good day.
Ronnie Meisner gets into her car. Ed helps her with the door. He stands outside her door, smiling.
Ronnie Meisner.
He gradually backs away as Ronnie struggles to put on her seatbelt. At home, Ed types Meisner into a search engine. He scans a page of images of men and women, none of whom are his Ronnie Meisner. He purses his lips, then types some more, bringing up a different bank of images. He rests his chin on his hand as he studies them. In the market, the view drifts down aisles of meat, aspirin, cough medicine, pasta, and soy sauce. Ronnie reads a bleach bottle as Ed approaches.
So, what are you shopping for today?
Oh, hi. Just some stuff. How about you?
Yeah, I'm just getting some stuff, too. Well, it's good to see you again. Ronnie?
Right. You have a good day.
Ed?
She glances back at him as she pushes her cart away. In the parking lot, Ronnie loads her car as Ed approaches again.
Well, you were busy. What are you getting ready for?
Oh, I just need some things.
You're ready, aren't you? I get it. I can see it.
He nods knowingly.
You can see.
I knew it the minute I saw you. You know, the way you were looking. Smart shopping. Strategic. I get it.
Well, I was just getting some things.
Yeah, I know. And I know you know. This is all going down.
Ronnie wears a perplexed expression.
You like coffee?
At a coffee house.
You gotta realize there's more to it than that. There's things that most people don't understand.
Ronnie listens intently.
America. This is such a special place, special in history. You gotta look at the whole picture. You ever hear of the Federalist Papers? To know what they are, you gotta go way back to what's called the Magna Carta. That's when things really got going. You can go back further than that if you want to see. It's all a matter of controlling people. You got basically two types, those who want to control you and those who don't want to be controlled. That's me, the second type. You want more coffee?
Oh, no. Ooh, I gotta get back.
She glances at her watch. Ed frowns.
Yeah, I gotta get back to some stuff, too.
Ronnie rushes into a gift shop.
Need to borrow my watch next time?
Sorry.
A dark-haired clerk wearing the name tag Tina doesn't look up until Ronnie passes by her. Ronnie closes curtains in a back room. Standing in front of a circular mirror, she puts on a red vest. She straightens the vest and her hair as she studies herself in the mirror. Later, Tina looks to the entrance. Ronnie stacks items on a low display shelf.
You like pie?
Ronnie turns to find Ed nodding inquisitively.
Oh, I like pie.
Just because they have some great pies at Guy's Grill. I was thinking maybe we could go to dinner and then finish up with a couple of slices. Apple, peach, around 8.
8 sounds good.
Oh,
Ed smiles, lowering his eyes and nodding. At night, Ed drives with Ronnie in the passenger seat of his truck. He glances to her uncomfortably as she faces forward, twirling her hair. They pull into a parking lot next to a blue and pink neon-lit building. A sign reads, "Karaoke Tonight."
They have karaoke.
Inside, a man sings on stage. Ed and Ronnie sit in a booth away from the stage.
Not that there's anything special about it. The way I see it, we're pretty much all the same. I'm your basic, average, red-blooded American male. I got a son, Brian. He's got a nice family. Great daughter, pretty wife. They got a big house about an hour or so from here. I had him around the time I started with Capital Bearings. I did systems analysis, basically quality control. You have no idea how screwed up the world would be if it weren't for ball bearings. And they have to be perfect, and I mean perfect, or else boom. About 6 years ago, I took the severance. It's a pretty decent deal. I'm not the type to complain. The way I see it, I'm the wrong side of 60 anyway. I'm not getting any younger, but I'm talking too much. How about you? You have kids?
Oh, and my daughter died.
Ed's face drops. Ronnie meets his gaze, nodding.
She was my world. But it wasn't fair. But you know what they say about life. Yeah. I like to sew, though. I got some stuff I like to do.
Oh, that's... I'm sorry.
Yeah. She was special. She was gonna be 13.
How'd she die?
Well, it was a really rare disease, MENS.
Men?
M-E-N-S. It's multiple endocrine neoplasia syndrome. I read so much. The doctor said nothing they could do. But I don't know.
Your husband?
He died too. But not from a rare disease, it's cancer. I told him not to smoke. What can you do?
What can any of us do?
You know what you said before about being on the wrong side of 60? To me, I don't think there's a wrong side of 60.
You know, I don't mind telling you that. I think you've got a real nose for this game. The way people look at things, it's all in the eyes. What kind of tuna do you prefer, generally speaking?
I guess Charlie?
Starkist, me too. Paper products?
Paper products?
Yeah, you know, toilet paper. It's important.
Oh, well, I don't really think about it. I just squeeze them.
Right. Yeah, it's all about not making things harder than they have to be. Batteries?
I know this one. Copper top.
Generic on that one, as far as I'm concerned. As long as it's alkaline. That's key.
You seem to know a lot about stuff.
Well, I do. Because I care.
I can see that.
Ronnie smiles slightly. Ed studies her and nods. Later, Ed's truck continues left at a fork in the road. Only the truck's headlamps light the pitch-black night. Inside, Ronnie tunes the radio.
Oh, that old thing. It's only good for news and weather. That's the only thing worth listening to, as far as I'm concerned. Everything else is just people trying to get you to buy something you don't need.
In the town and doing it right in the evening.
Ronnie bops her head.
Muskrat Susie, Muskrat Sam. Doing the jitterbug in the Muskrat Land.
With an anguished expression, Ed pulls the truck over.
Sam is so scared.
He jumps out.
What is it? What's wrong?
He rushes away.
Ed, what is it?
You can't do this!
He continues.
Well, I know, I'm not a great singer.
No, that's not...
You don't like Muskrat Love?
I love Muskrat Love!
I'm sorry.
No. Don't say you're sorry, it's not you, you're...
He starts back.
You're wonderful.
Well, what is it? Ed?
Ed takes off, running away again. Ronnie gets out.
Ed?
I like you.
She goes after him.
I like you, too.
No, I mean, I really like you. And it scares the hell out of me.
His chest heaves. She puts a hand to her mouth, then runs to him. In a field on the side of the road, they embrace one another, then kiss awkwardly. Later, the truck pulls to a stop.
I had a really great time.
Oh. Ed jumps out of the cab and grabs a bouquet of flowers from the bed of the truck.
I got these for you.
They're beautiful. Well, good night.
Ronnie leans in for a kiss. She hops out. The door slamming causes Ed to flinch. Ronnie takes a few steps toward her house, then stops. She comes back to the truck.
Can we go to your place?
Ed quickly nods. At his house, Ed opens the door for Ronnie.
Can I,
Oh. Yes.
He takes her jacket and hangs it up in a closet. He removes his jacket and turns on a lamp by a couch.
Oh, put these in water till I go.
Oh, sure.
He takes the bouquet.
Let me get you something to drink. I have everything.
Oh, just water.
Are you sure? Got everything. Wine, beer, mixed drinks.
No, just water, please.
Got that too. Purified and fluoride free.
He grabs water bottles, glasses, and fills a vase from the tap.
Your house is lovely.
Moving through the meticulously kept living room, Ronnie approaches a mounted deer head.
Everything is so well.
Ed puts the flowers in a blender pitcher.
Kept?
It's my home.
Joining her, he hands Ronnie a glass of water.
Oh, here. Why don't you sit down?
He sets the glasses on a coffee table.
Do you want to watch TV?
Oh, okay.
Here, let's see.
He presses a remote.
So what do you like to see? Sports? No. No, I'm kidding. Movies? I like movies. Old ones. Yeah, back when they knew what they were doing. Yeah, things were different then. And I don't mind saying it was better as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I like being progressive and all that sort of thing, but there comes a point when you just got to say, John Wayne is where I want to be. You know what I mean?
I think so.
So what kind of movies do you like?
Documentaries.
On what? What kind of subject?
War.
Black and white footage plays.
I wouldn't have pegged you as a war type.
No, war is so interesting. My dad was in the war, the big one.
Do you know where?
Well, he said he saw the world. He said it was great.
Oh, yeah. I was... Oh. I never got to go.
No, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. A man can learn a lot about himself in war.
Yeah, my dad just mostly learned how to drink.
Then there's that, too.
Ronnie eats popcorn as they sit together on the couch. She stares ahead thoughtfully, then turns to Ed.
You like to drink it?
Sometimes. Well, not a lot. I like to keep a clear head. You never know when you're going to need your wits.
Ronnie nods, and they both turn their eyes back to the TV, where soldiers load into an airplane. Ed glances at the woman sitting next to him. She continues eating popcorn and watching TV and doesn't notice him looking at her. He moves closer, leaning in.
Oh, can we just sit here, please? I mean, I know that... I just like being here. Just sitting and watching TV.
Ed nods.
No, we can sit and watch TV. That would be great.
Ronnie smiles and nods. They turn back to the TV to an aerial view of bombs exploding below. Later, Ronnie rests her sleeping head on Ed's shoulder. Ed gently removes the popcorn bowl from her lap and sets it down next to himself. With her head still on his shoulder, Ed clasps his hands together and takes a big, contented breath. In the morning, Ed carries unmatching coffee mugs to the back of the couch and leans over a sleeping Ronnie.
Good morning.
She startles awake.
two equals, right?
She covers her eyes.
Was it just one?
She checks her watch.
Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no,
What is it? No,
no, no. She puts on her shoes.
I'm late for work. Well,
so you're a little late for work.
No.
She rushes out the door. Ed speeds down the road with Ronnie sitting anxiously in the passenger seat. He zooms past a vehicle, then pulls to a stop outside the gift shop. Ronnie leans in for a quick kiss before exiting the truck. Ronnie enters the gift shop. Tina watches with wide eyes, grinning.
Oh my God. You didn't go home last night.
Ronnie straightens, shakes her hair, and marches past the counter.
Ronnie Meisner, I do believe you are doing the walk of shame.
Tina quickly glances to Ed in the truck. In the back room, Ronnie stares at herself in the circular mirror. A big smile forms on her face as she buttons up her shirt. Outside, blades of tall grass waver in a breeze. In the distance, a dense flock of birds moves flowingly through the sky as one. In the gift shop, a pink, round, ornamental jar sits on a shelf. Ronnie leans in closer and inspects it. She reaches for it, then pulls her hand back.
No.
Now she sets it on the counter before Tina.
Really? That?
Ronnie nods. Tina rolls her eyes before ringing it up. Later.
Oh, I have arrived.
You sure?
Don't worry about me.
You're not out of the way or anything.
God, I'm fine. Honest.
100%.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah?
Thank you.
Man.
But I'm good.
As Tina locks up, a black muscle car pulls up.
I only hope I can do it like you do when I'm your age.
Oh, it's not what it seems.
Whatever. Just don't do anything I wouldn't do twice.
With Tina in the passenger seat, the car pulls away. Ronnie watches it leave, then glances the other way, where a flashing traffic light hangs over an empty street. As Ronnie waits expectantly, Ed watches TV in his underwear.
The third major power outage this year due to high winds. The LLPC has begun upgrades to the system that are intended to prevent future power outages. Needless to say, Ed Hemsler has a backup generator for just such occasions. Because Ed Hemsler thinks of everything.
He approaches the TV.
Because Ed Hemsler thinks of everything. Because Ed Hemsler thinks of everything.
The newscaster seems to give Ed a tight-lipped, fake smile. Outside the gift shop, Ronnie holds tightly to the purse strap hanging off her shoulder. A taxi cab pulls up and she gets in. The cab drives away down the empty street. The word Oman flashes on and off on a theater's marquee. In the morning, Ed eyes the last pill left in his bottle. He caps the bottle and puts it back on the shelf. Staring into the mirror, he lifts his shirt and slaps his stomach. At work, Ronnie exits the back room.
You're like Chinese?
She startles. Ed's bright face drops as Ronnie stares daggers at him. He frowns as Ronnie turns to a shelf.
We don't have to do Chinese.
Ed Hemsler, a woman doesn't like to be left in the dark. When a gentleman takes her out, the least he could do is contact her in some way and let her know that he had fond memories of their evening together. Even if he didn't, because that's what gentlemen do.
But I am a gentleman.
Well, then where were you? Why didn't you call me?
I thought you might want a break or something.
A break? From what?
Well, from me.
She walks over to him.
I kissed you.
You did.
Ronnie stares at his sad gaze.
Chinese is fine.
She storms away.
I'll be right out front.
Later.
You can find out the truth if you know where to look for it. The internet is the biggest library in the universe. Someone called it the deep water of logic and limitation. And I like to swim. Ask me something.
Something like what?
Something like anything.
At a Chinese restaurant.
Well, I don't know. Like what?
Well, isn't there something you want to know that you don't know?
Not really.
Nothing?
Nope.
So you know everything there is you want to know?
No, I didn't say that.
So what do you want to know?
I think what I mean is I don't know what I want to know yet about you. And when I know what I want to know, I'll let you know. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Ronnie uses chopsticks as Ed moves his food around with a fork.
Good noodles.
In a hardware store.
One day, you must remember to explain to me what this has to do with the real world.
What this has to do with the real world? What the... Jesus, Brian. No, I'm not hogging the conversation. You want to speak? Go ahead, speak.
You know, I actually don't want to talk about any of this anymore. It's not like I have a bank account that is magically filled every other week. I have work that I have to do.
Are you saying I didn't earn it?
I'm not saying any.
$23.50?
Well, I did earn it. 17 years of earning it, doing real work, work that mattered, back when people honored their commitments. Now, all I can say is good luck when it's time to collect.
We don't accept checks anymore.
As Ed holds out a check, the cashier points to a sign detailing what he just said.
Now, I know you think I'm saying all this stuff just to make you think that I'm smarter than you so that I can act like I'm still your father. Well, I got news for you. I am still your father.
I know. You're still my father. That's why I called. Janet and I want to invite you to Thanksgiving dinner this year.
Ed pauses in the parking lot.
Will your mother be there?
Of course not. Will you come?
Can I bring someone?
As Tina enters the gift shop with a phone to her ear, Ronnie turns to her.
Tina.
Ronnie indicates that she'd like to discuss something.
Hey, I'll call you back, okay? Yeah.
At the counter.
I see him. The way he waits outside for you, he's like so totally your BFF.
What is that, a BFF?
Best friend forever.
He waits for me?
Look, my guy, the guy I'm into right now, he's like that. He thinks about me. He holds doors.
No, Ed does that.
Ed?
Mm-hmm.
Ed's a good name. I mean, it's not very original, but that might not be such a bad thing. You want my opinion? I say ride it like a wave.
Ronnie glances upward.
What does that mean, Ryder?
Don't fall off the board and it's all good. When I'm your age, if I don't mess it up, I'm gonna have an Ed, okay? And I'm gonna dig it because it's all there is. Just Ed, or Chris and Bobby, Peter.
He's invited me to Thanksgiving at his son's house.
Whoa. Turkey is a serious thing. It's a commitment. You can tell a lot about a person by how they cook a turkey.
I don't think Ed's gonna be making the turkey.
In his den, Ed types out and posts a message. The message from Captain Reality reads, Da Vinci said there's three kinds of people, those who see when shown, those who do not see. A reply from The Seeker reads, What kind are you? Ed gazes down pensively.
I've got you.
Sure.
Almost there.
Ed guides Ronnie, who covers her eyes with her hands, to the back of his house.
Keep them closed.
Okay, I am.
Showing you this means I'm trusting you more than anybody.
What is it?
No, keep them closed.
They're closed.
Even my son has never seen this.
For goodness sake, what is it?
Open them now.
Okay.
Uncovering her eyes, Ronnie stands before the nondescript back wall.
You can't see it, can you?
What can't I see?
Ed pulls the magnetic key from his pocket and shows it to her. He sets it on a wall panel. He slides it down. The secret door unlatches and Ronnie's mouth falls open. He swings the door fully open. Ronnie stares inside, then at him. She moves inside. Ed shuts the door. The lights come on, revealing a firearm hanging on the wall, rubbing alcohol, vacuum-sealed packages of meat, and canned goods.
You have to promise me that you will never tell anyone what you've seen here today.
I do. I promise.
Because if people find out, when the SHTF, they will tear this place apart. Not that I want to be cruel or anything. They've had plenty of warning.
Ed crouches down.
This is the power supply over here. I got these special mufflers I designed myself. The exhaust is channeled around to the other side of the house to a hidden chute.
Smoke wafts from an exhaust outside the house. Ronnie inspects a bulk package of condoms.
You really aren't ready for anything.
The way I see it, you never know when things are going to go south. The world, the flesh, and the devil conspire, and things fall apart. This is my security blanket, my safety net.
They approach each other.
My 401k.
Do you remember when you asked me if there was anything that I wanted to know that I didn't know?
Yeah.
How? How did you do this?
What do you mean?
It's perfect.
They move closer together and kiss. Ed and Ronnie head to town in his truck. They shop for tuna together at the market. Now they eat hot dogs in the truck. Ed spots a man with a tattooed face and stretched earlobes in the side mirror and shakes his head.
Wrong.
In a sporting goods store, Ed covers his face with his hands. He turns to find Ronnie dressed in mustard yellow coveralls. He rushes to her and zips it up. In a hardware store, Ed pours ball bearings into Ronnie's hands. She drops them to the floor and the couple scoot away down the aisle. Now Ronnie climbs into a shopping cart and Ed pushes her around the store. In Ed's garage, Ronnie stands near the open door as Ed pulls away plastic sheeting covering a hanging dead deer. Ronnie's eyes close as she falls limply to the ground. Ed rushes over to her. Outside, they both don a pair of large black sunglasses. Standing in the bed of his truck, the couple stare toward the setting sun. Ed pulls the truck over outside Ronnie's house.
Here, let me help you then.
Oh, I can handle it.
Oh, come on, let me be the gentleman.
You are the perfect gentleman.
Why don't you let me...
Please?
She leans in for a kiss. Ronnie gets out. She looks back in. Ronnie heads toward her house as Ed watches.
Perfect.
After she goes inside, Ed starts his truck and drives away. Morning. Ed shakes the bottle with one pill still inside. He gazes at it thoughtfully. He does push-ups at the foot of his bed. He quickly gets to his feet and jogs through the house and in place. Later, Ed and Ronnie trek across a fenced-in field.
I keep this place to work on basic skill sets. You got nothing to be afraid of.
I'm so not afraid.
Ed helps Ronnie aim a rifle.
And let your eye go right down the barrel to sight what you want to hit.
Couldn't you thought of something more sinister?
It's a bear.
It's a teddy bear.
She blows a teddy bear off its perch. Ed's truck bolts down the two-lane highway as the late afternoon sun hangs above. Nighttime near a stream, Ed and Ronnie sit at a campfire, the flickering flames illuminating their faces.
What are you laughing about?
This. Us here. So peaceful.
Mm-hmm. It's nice.
I laugh because soon it's all going to be over.
What do you mean?
I mean moments like this. They're going to be few and far between. Most of the time, we'll be scrambling to survive.
I don't understand. What? Survive what?
You have to know what I'm talking about. Deep down, you can feel it even if you don't admit it to yourself. It might start with a news bullet. You're watching a commercial or something, and suddenly this guy comes on, one of those plastic talking robots telling us the stock market is going to crash. And then the president comes on. And the people are all waiting for him to speak. And when he does, he says there's a national emergency and he has to declare martial law. So you can't believe it. So you go to the local store and you see everyone in the street with this strange look in their eyes because they can't believe it too. So you get to the store and it's filled with people buying everything they can get their hands on. And up in the sky, helicopters start going whoop, whoop overhead. And you know. The first day, you watch TV trying to find out what's going on. But by the third day, it's nothing but static. And the net's down, too, just like your cell phone. Around about this time, you hear the first gunshot. And at first, it sounds strange and novel. But then, it's everywhere. It starts getting closer. And then you see a body in the street. Nobody's come to move it. And then another, and another. So you decide to leave, only you're not alone. The streets are choked with cars. And then the military comes. Only it's not our military, it's some other country's. And you can't believe it. But you know it's true. You know.
He gives her a knowing look, then shakes his head.
It's all over.
Ronnie stares, wide-eyed.
You really think that's gonna happen?
Ed wears an uncertain expression.
Maybe. I don't know.
He rises to his feet.
You're a really special lady, Ronnie Meisner.
Ed turns from the campfire and walks toward the stream.
Ed?
He stops at the edge of the water, gazing off pensively, wearing a worried expression. Later, Ronnie, lying on her side, opens her eyes to find Ed sleeping across from her, the campfire between them. She moves her sleeping bag next to him and lies down inside it. As he remains facing the fire, Ronnie leans on him from behind.
Are you okay?
Aces.
She moves her hand down and he reaches up to hold it. Ronnie rests her head on his arm. Pink and yellow hues color the clouds scattered above a peaceful wooded area. Shirts, pants, jackets, and ties lie neatly on Ed's bed as he tries on various outfits in front of a mirror. He slips on a pair of shoes and pulls on a pair of pants. He tries on a vest which will not button all the way. Wearing a different shirt, he puts on a tie. Back in his underwear, he rummages in his closet. Now he stands before the mirror dressed in a beige suit, dark shirt, and a tie. He removes the jacket, belt, and shoes. Back in his underwear, he stands over the clothes on the bed. In his truck, Ed straightens the collars on his light shirt and dark jacket. He doesn't wear a tie. He pulls to a stop outside Ronnie's house and watches, transfixed, as she approaches wearing a light blouse and matching dark skirt, jacket, necktie, and hat. Carrying a bottle of wine, she poses playfully. Ed's truck zooms past fields of green and brown. Now it enters a cul-de-sac and pulls up a long driveway past a neatly kept yard to a nice-sized house. A clean-cut man peeks out and opens the door.
Dad.
Hey.
Welcome.
They shake.
This is, my girlfriend, Ronnie.
She hands him the wine.
And happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much. Ronnie, I'm Brian. It's great to meet you.
Ed.
Janet.
Hi.
A smiling woman kisses Ed.
I'm so glad you could make it.
Oh, honey, this is Ronnie, Dad's girlfriend.
No? Janet kisses Ronnie's cheek.
Look at you.
Hey.
Adorable.
Ed heads inside.
There's my girl.
Hi, Grandpa.
He embraces his blonde teenage granddaughter as the others watch from the doorway.
Come in. I wouldn't want to be part of that.
Yeah, you don't want to be with that.
Janine.
Janet nods toward Ronnie, and Janine moves to her.
I'm Janine.
Nice to meet you, Ronnie.
Ed and Brian sit in the living room, gazing uncomfortably at a football game, while Janet and Ronnie drink wine in the kitchen.
How long has it been with you two?
Oh, not long. So, but
it's good.
Yeah. You two. You both seem so young. So vital.
You can turn it up if you want.
Oh, no, it's really not a problem. I just like to look at the score.
Oh, you can turn it up.
It's really better with the sound down. I know what you're thinking.
I'm not thinking anything. I thought that's what this was all about, not thinking.
You ever talk about traveling together? Now's the time. Brian and I, we've been plotting our trip to Spain.
Oh, Spain sounds nice.
It's hard, you know? Make the time to travel, to get on track. Who are you in it with that? Are you guys on track?
You're going great. We're on track.
Don't be so sensitive.
I get it. The angry old man thing.
I'm not angry. I care.
I care, too. About my family.
Oh, you got a funny way of showing it. Keeping your head in the sand.
Okay.
I'll bite.
Show me.
Brian,
No, really.
Show me something worth seeing.
All right.
And so it begins.
Where are they going?
Where what?
No, thanks.
Did you even read it?
Of course I read it. You stood here pacing back and forth while I read the thing.
What's in your bug out bag?
What is a bug out bag?
The bag that's waiting for you in the SHTF.
The what?
When the shit hits the fan!
Brian rolls his eyes and drops into an armchair.
Why do you always act like this?
Like what?
Like you're in on some secret that nobody else knows about.
I'm not the only one. There are lots of people who know what's going on.
That's right. You're all sitting around in your underwear with your computer.
I do not sit around in my underwear.
Okay, whatever the fuck you're wearing.
In her bedroom, Janine sits on her bed, back against the wall, listening to the argument.
What we see are just people trying to survive.
Exactly. Survive. Look, all I'm saying let me show you.
Why don't you just admit it? You're scared. You're scared to face the fact that you never.
Janet listens outside the door.
What? That's just the world. That's what it is.
Dinner.
It's fucked up. It is crazy. It's stupid. But it's just the world.
Dinner.
You know what? We are all gonna die one day. Even you.
Frowning, Ed stares at his son. Later, a turkey sits on the dining table.
There. Go to the far outside.
And go work my way there.
Yes, you work your way.
Thank you, Dad.
Yes, please help yourself. Don't let it get cold.
Brian carves and serves the turkey.
Thanks, Brian.
Janine sets down her plate.
This looks very, very good.
And sweet potatoes?
Oh, we're not doing sweet potatoes this year.
No sweet potatoes?
Mm-mm.
It must really be the end of the world.
You should try this. It's basmati rice. It's from India.
I know basmati rice from his mom. Next, you're gonna finish it all because all these time children in India or something. Which reminds me, why exactly are we eating their rice?
It's not theirs. It's yours now. So yes, you should finish it.
She passes the rice to Ed.
It's exotic.
It's a little festive this year, a little dinner.
I think it's innovative, yeah. Right?
Outside, Ed's truck is parked behind a fuel economy car.
I don't know if I'm starving or something.
I was just talking to Ronnie here about her and Ed maybe taking a little trip. Hmm? Maybe going someplace exotic?
I'm sure if they want to take a trip, they'll take a trip.
Janet shoots Brian a look.
I wanted to see China.
China? You know what they're doing over there?
I like the food.
There's more to the world than Chinese restaurants.
There we go.
Like what, Grandpa?
Well, the thing about China.
I think your grandpa would like to have his dinner in peace.
No,
I know what you're doing, young lady.
I'm not doing anything.
Oh, that's right. You're so clever. You're smarter than all of us.
Oh, my fucking God.
Janine.
Like I'm saying something you haven't said a million times.
I can assure you I do not use
that. And why do you always have to pretend to be something you're not? It's like I'm living in the Twilight Zone.
Oh, please. You don't even know what the Twilight Zone is.
It's a stupid TV show in black and white, so yes, I know what the Twilight Zone is, Brian.
All right, that's enough.
What? You gonna send me to my room, Brian?
As a matter of fact,
hey,
yeah.
Hey, what kind of daughter calls her father by his first name?
One who has no respect, that kind.
For what?
For what? For what? How about the roof over your head? Or how about the orthodontist? Or how about the phone? Or how about all the school books that I buy you never even have time to read?
Why should I? The world's gonna end any day now anyway.
That is just great. You see, you have her talking this crap now. You see what you've done?
Oh, Janine's got a mind of her own.
Yeah, I just decide to use it.
To stockpile nonsense?
You know what, how about we all calm down and maybe we talk about something that we can all agree on?
Hmm? Me and Brian agree on something. We both think our fathers are assholes.
All right, that's it. Zero tronics for you. That means 1 month, no TV, no phone.
No phone?
Yeah. Ask your grandpa about that. How are y'all gonna deal with that when the internet goes down, the electrical grid collapses, and then we have to communicate with what? You guys are gonna have to use smoke signals?
Mom!
Maybe if you had a little bit more self-control.
No, I hope the world does end and takes you with it.
Come back here, young lady. Come back here.
Janine storms out the front door. Brian chases after her, followed by Ed.
More wine?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Janet pours Ronnie wine. Brian stops running as Janine continues down the street. Ed stops next to him.
Where's she going?
Nowhere.
You think I'm an asshole?
Brian turns to him. Later, Ronnie holds a plate of leftovers in her lap as Ed drives. She glances over to him, then places her hand on his. Headlights shine in the dark night as the truck continues on the road home. Ed pulls the truck to a stop outside Ronnie's house. He gets out and moves to the passenger side door. He swings her door open and Ronnie steps out.
Good night, Ronnie.
She gives him a kiss on the lips and heads toward her house. Ed stands by the truck, watching her go. Ronnie slows, glances over his shoulder, then leans toward Ed.
Don't you want to come in?
Ed steps forward hesitantly. Ronnie continues down the walkway as Ed gradually catches up. The couple enter the dark house.
Oh, hell.
The lights come on. Ronnie bows her head as Ed's eyes widen. Stacks of books, a sewing machine, and other items cover a low table.
Jesus.
A small path winds through more covered tables and stacks of boxes. Snow globes, dolls, and other random items take up every inch of space in the hoarder's house. Ronnie moves to straighten items, but gives up. As she goes to the kitchen, Ed stares, his mouth agape.
Would you like a drink?
I thought you were a fellow traveler.
I am a fellow traveler.
No, I mean a prepper. The way you shopped, the stuff you bought, you used cash. Not that I go in for that level of paranoia personally, but you can see how I could have come to that conclusion.
Cash is easy. You don't have to remember numbers.
You might try checks.
Everybody doesn't take checks. Everybody takes cash.
Ronnie comes back to Ed with a glass of liquor and the bottle. Ed takes the drink and downs it. Ronnie pours out some more and he slugs it.
When my daughter died, it started up in her room and it just came down here.
But I don't understand how you
Please.
Could...
Please.
Ronnie takes his hand. She moves closer and they kiss passionately. Lips locked, they start to move. They remove their jackets as they stumble over items on the floor. Ed lands on a cluttered couch with Ronnie on top of him. Sitting up, Ed removes his boxer shorts, then fishes his wallet out of his pants pocket. He pulls out a condom. Ronnie holds it, then tosses it over her shoulder with a smile. She plants kisses on his lips, then his face. As they continue to kiss passionately on the couch, the view drifts away from them and into the dark, cluttered kitchen. Now the morning light fades up, revealing a messy kitchen sink and counter. As the view drifts over the stove, a set of clean plates and an empty frying pan fade in. Now bacon cooks in the pan as toast appears on the plates. Ronnie flips the bacon over with a fork. Ed lies asleep on the couch under a patchwork blanket. Precarious stacks of books and other items surround him. He awakens and stretches an arm out from under the covers. Ronnie cracks eggs into the pan. Ed glances around with a confused expression. He sits up and a doll on the couch back falls to where he was lying. He spots Ronnie cooking in the kitchen. Ed grabs an item in its packaging out of a basket, then touches a figurine sitting on a shelf. He takes a step and things fall over.
Oh, don't worry about it.
Ed makes his way to a window and moves a curtain aside to peer out. A reflection of his truck appears in the glass.
Do you want your toast buttered or want to do it yourself?
No, you can butter it.
Ed picks up the pink, round, ornamental jar that Ronnie purchased at the gift shop. Holding it in his palm, he studies it. Suddenly, his hand starts to shake and his face cringes.
Oh, just leave it. I don't want you to hurt yourself.
Ronnie rushes from the kitchen to find Ed lying on his back, motionless. She kneels and touches his arm.
Ed.
Ed's truck remains parked outside Ronnie's. In a hospital waiting area, Ronnie sits as a doctor approaches.
Mrs. Meisner?
How is he?
Your husband's...
No, he's my boyfriend.
Your boyfriend has had what we call a TIA. It's like a mini stroke, but temporary. It seems he's been rationing his medications, missing the target on his recommended dosages. He's gonna be a bit wobbly for a time, but he seems like a tough man.
Can I see him now?
Certainly, but take it easy on him.
The doctor walks away, and Ronnie gazes downward. She gets up. In a hospital room, Ed lies with his eyes closed, hooked up to oxygen tubes and an IV. Ronnie stands beside his bed. As she touches his shoulder, he opens his eyes. She gently rubs him with her thumb.
The poor dear.
He shakes his head.
I'm not
a poor dear.
No. You're strong. The doctor told me you weren't taking your medication. Yeah, it's the money, isn't it? I know how expensive it gets. I know. But you makes no sense. You spend all your money on that stuff.
He frowns.
For something that may not even happen. No, you only think about tomorrow. But I'm here. I'm here right now.
Their eyes well up with tears.
And all I think about is you.
I came as fast as I could.
Brian enters wearing a shocked expression as he sees his father in the hospital bed. Ronnie moves away, facing a window with closed blinds.
Dad.
Brian approaches the bed. Ed gives him a nod, then looks toward Ronnie, crying at the window. At night, a large lighted sign across the top of a multi-story building reads Medical Center. Still wearing the oxygen tubes, Ed lies in his bed and opens his eyes. He stares at the ceiling, and an anxious expression comes over his face. He glances over to his side to find Ronnie asleep on the chair in the corner of his hospital room. He reaches out and holds her hand in his. He turns his head back, facing the ceiling. He closes his eyes, his hand still clutching hers. Daytime. In a wheelchair, Ed is rolled to Brian's car. Ronnie opens the door. Using a four-legged cane, Ed rises from the wheelchair and gets into the passenger seat. Situated, he pulls the car door shut. Now, riding as Brian drives, Ed pulls down the sun visor. He slides over the mirror cover and pushes the visor back up. He inspects and touches the door, then tests the dashboard with his fingers.
You know, you're the smartest man I know.
No, I'm not. I'm an asshole. But I'm getting better.
Brian smiles as Ed stares out the window. As they continue in the car, Ed notices a sign on a tree reading, "Yard Sale, 107 Pearl Street." His gaze shifts thoughtfully. Brian pulls to a stop in his father's driveway. Ed's truck is parked under the carport.
The truck runs good.
Well, it's a Ford.
Ed stares away as Brian nods his head.
Thanks for picking it up.
Ronnie seems like a really great lady.
Yeah, pretty great.
Well,
you got a minute.
Ed pops open the car door and gets to his feet. Brian comes around the vehicle and retrieves the cane from the back seat. He gives it to the hunched over Ed.
Follow me.
Brian follows Ed as they make their way to the back of the house. Ed stops in front of the nondescript wall and gets his son to look at it.
What do you see?
Nothing.
Exactly.
With a grin, Ed hobbles over to it and places the magnetic key in place. He swings open the door, then gives Brian another grin.
See it now?
Brian shakes his head. Ed motions for him to go inside. Brian enters Ed's stockpile room, its metal shelves lined with goods. The lights come on.
So, this is where all your money goes?
Ed nods pleadingly.
So?
What do you think?
Brian strolls down an aisle.
Honestly? I'm not sure.
Well, you can tell me.
Ed twirls a finger at his temple.
Crazy, right?
Look, Dad, I...
Well, sometimes crazy times call for crazy people.
You know, Dad, I don't think you're crazy. Okay, maybe a little. But I think you have to do what makes you happy. I mean, I think that's all any of us can do. I mean, if this is what makes you happy and you're not hurting anyone, I'd say, what the hell, go for it.
And that's what you think.
That's what I think.
Ed fights back tears. He drops his head and moves away.
Hey, Dad. Are you okay?
Holy shit.
Ed turns, smiling.
I am happy.
Brian slaps his arm. Brian smiles. Now Ed slowly punches the word horde into a search engine. A bank of images appear on his computer monitor. He clicks through photos of people with excessive clutter in their living spaces. Ed furrows his brow. He opens the door. Ronnie stands on the porch, a small cooler in hand. At the table, Ronnie sets down a plate before Ed. White meat turkey, mashed potatoes, and peas and carrots. Accompanying dinner on a smaller plate are two white pills. Ed lifts his gaze to her and she nods. Ed sips some water, then takes the pills, bending his head back to swallow. He sets down the glass and sticks out his empty tongue. Ronnie shakes her head, smiling slightly.
You're my BFF.
Ed raises his brow, staring at her.
Muskrat, muskrat, candlelight. Doing the town and doing it right in the evening. It's pretty pleasing.
Muskrat Susie, muskrat Sam, doing the jitterbug in the muskrat land.
And the shimmy.
Sam is so skinny.
And they whirl and they twirl and they tangle. Singing and jingling and jangle. Float like the heavens above.
I saw a sign today.
They lie on their backs in Ed's bed.
It's a sign. From God?
Well, I don't know. It said yard sale.
Yard sale?
Not to get metaphysical or anything, but I had an inspiration. And it does feel kind of divine.
Divine? Wow.
I was thinking, maybe if we had a yard sale, my stuff and yours.
Ronnie's eyes open wide.
We could make a weekend of it. I did some research. People can make a lot of money. But even if we don't, I have a feeling.
What happened when you were in the hospital?
What happened?
Did you see a light?
The light?
You know. The light.
I don't think so. I just have a feeling. I don't mean to upset you.
Now they sit in the truck outside the gift shop.
I'm not upset.
You sound upset.
I'm not upset. I have a feeling, too. Maybe it's not
divine like you, but I have a feeling too.
Ronnie moves her hand toward his, then pulls it back momentarily before putting her hand on top and squeezing gently. Later, they watch TV at Ed's.
No, not him.
Ronnie controls the remote.
Yeah.
Oh, I love her.
She leaves on the brown-haired newscaster.
She always looks so classy.
Ed glares at the TV screen.
There were diplomats, there were Americans, there were Parisians, there were Syrian refugees. Everyone traveled together on the way to Florence.
Ed mutes it.
Wait, that's interesting. I thought you always say we should keep up with current events.
Current events? You want current events? Well, you're not going to find it there. That woman is a liar. A lying, dishonest, disloyal, opportunistic liar. Then one day we'll realize what she did, and then she'll regret it. I can promise you that.
Why do you say that? You don't even know her.
Oh, I know her all right. She's my ex-wife.
Your wife?
My ex-wife. She left a long time ago.
He stands.
19 years.
She's Brian's mother?
Yeah. He's a genuine son of a bitch.
Ed, don't talk like that.
Funny. I still watch her every day.
She'll always mean something to you. It's okay.
Ed swallows, then faces Ronnie.
Sunday. It's the best day for a yard sale. I looked it up.
She sets down the popcorn bowl.
Sunday?
Yeah, well, it's as good as any Sunday.
But what about...
Ed steps toward her.
It's time. You know...
He sits back down.
We can start organizing your stuff on Tuesday. If it's okay with you.
She nods. Later, behind the gift shop.
What do you do if a boyfriend that you really, really care about wants you to do something?
Tina smokes as Ronnie eats.
I just feel a little uncomfortable about
it. I have to say, it depends. How bad is it?
Well...
Ronnie tilts her head back and forth.
Well, now I really want to know what it is.
Ronnie shakes her head.
Forget it.
Never let a man make you do something you don't want to do.
Ronnie's eyes dart. On a computer monitor, an open calendar window reads Tuesday. In his secret stockpile room, Ed holds a flip phone to his ear. He hangs up. Outside Ronnie's house, Ed knocks on the front door. Her hatchback sits parked in the driveway. Inside, views of the kitchen, stairs, and a room reveal excessive items everywhere, but no Ronnie. A clear globe with a merry-go-round horse inside comes into focus. Stepping away from the house using his cane, Ed pauses when he spots Ronnie's car in the driveway. At the gift shop, Ronnie does inventory as Ed's truck stops outside. She cowers close to a shelf as Ed enters the store. Ed beelines past Tina and a customer toward Ronnie.
Why don't you answer my calls?
I'm working.
I know you're working. I can see you're working. Why don't you answer my calls?
Please, not here.
Yes, here. You won't come to me. I have to come to you.
You don't understand.
Then explain it to me.
No, I can't explain it to you. Even if I could, you wouldn't understand. I don't understand.
You said you would do it with me.
I didn't say I would do it with you.
You did.
Keep your voice down.
He glances at Tina.
Why is it so important to you what I do?
Because it's what we talked about. It's for us.
No, it's for you. I'm fine where I am. I'm good where I am.
No, you're not.
Oh, don't you presume to tell me about me, Ed Hemsler.
I am a grown woman. I don't have to listen to you.
I didn't say you had to listen to me.
Just get out.
Now, just a minute.
Get out!
Is there a problem?
Tina comes over.
Well, there's no problem. Ed was just leaving.
Ed wears a hurt expression.
I thought this was for real.
Ronnie averts her gaze. Ed shakes his head. He limps toward the exit. The sun hangs low in a hazy sky. Ed drives his truck. A reflection of a cemetery appears on the back window. The pickup travels alone on a two-lane highway with dirt fields on both sides. Ed sits in the parked truck. In the rearview mirror, his eyes stare ahead forlornly. Later, he sits in his recliner.
She asked how you were doing. So I said, you remember when you broke up with Sam?
Sam?
It was her boyfriend for like 2 weeks in the eighth grade. But anyway, they're talking, and it was probably the first time that I really opened up about what it was like when you and Mom were splitting. All the door slamming. Like, that was your last word, but it never was. And I was just sitting there like a... And then one day the door stopped slamming and she was gone. Hey, Dad.
I'm here.
Look, all I'm saying is that sometimes it can feel like you're losing everything, but really, you're not losing, you're gaining.
Or at least that's what you taught me.
At his home, Brian sits in a recliner.
I taught you that.
Well, not in so many words. But yeah.
Ed shifts his recliner back.
So, what else did I teach you?
As Captain Reality, Ed posts a message. The way I see it, some people need to be who they are, even if they don't want to be who they are. It's just that simple. Ed watches as Mystery Maker, Rebel Runner, and The Seeker all reply, agreeing and saluting Captain Reality. Ed turns off his monitor and desk lamp and gets up. He turns off a lamp by the entryway, removes his glasses, turns off another light in the living room, and goes to his bedroom. Daytime, a group of trees stands near a field of golden corn. The lights come on in Ed's stockpile room. With a clipboard in hand, Ed checks the inventory on his shelves. He opens the freezer door and writes on his clipboard. He rests the handle of his cane on a shelf and scribbles more notes. With his garage door open, Ed spray paints a piece of cardboard leaning on a chair. Now he pulls his truck to a stop near a wooden post at an intersection. He hangs a striped, multicolored sign which reads, Yard Sale, 805 Willow Lane. In his yard, Ed drags a folding table across the lawn and sets it up. He picks his cane off the ground and heads off. He sets a crate of items on the table. Using a wheelbarrow, he carts more stockpile items out of the back of the house. He uses a label maker and sticks a tuna fish label in front of the cans on a table. Stockpile items sit on top and under five folding tables on his lawn. Ed takes a seat in a lawn chair. He sets down a thermos next to a bag of sunflower seeds on a cardboard box beside him. He picks up the clipboard. A car pulls up in front of his yard. Ed stands as a man and woman get out.
How are you doing today?
We saw from the street here.
Later, more people check out his yard sale. A man pulls a pouch of tuna from a cardboard display box full of them. Other customers check out binoculars, a hat, and canned drinks.
Wow. Let's take a look around.
Ed wears a satisfied smile.
Excuse me?
Ed looks over and his face drops. Standing before him, holding out the pink round ornamental jar, is Ronnie.
How much is this?
Ronnie smiles slightly, and Ed's face lightens up.
That depends. How much is it worth to you?
Not as much as I thought.
They approach one another. Ed takes the jar.
Well, maybe somebody else might need it more than you.
He sets it down.
Yeah, maybe. You never know when you might need a pretty jar.
They stare at one another, smiling.
You're my BFF. My granddaughter told me what that means.
Best friend forever.
Ed gazes at Ronnie with loving eyes and leans in. Their lips meet. A flash illuminates their kiss. They disengage to see a ball of orange light in the distance. A mushroom-shaped cloud appears as Ed, Ronnie, and the yard sale patrons all stare at the spectacle. A closer view reveals the fiery part rising, pushing clouds of smoke higher. Lightning-like flashes spark above and around the expanding center. The patrons stare with wide eyes and mouths agape. Ed and Ronnie watch wearing awestruck expressions. Both don their large black sunglasses and smile. Ed extends his hand and Ronnie holds onto it. Their hands stay clasped as the surreal expanding phenomenon before them creeps forward. Cut to black. End credits roll. John Lithgow, Blythe Danner, Derek Cecil, Katie Asselton, Sophie Thatcher, Eve Harlow, Wendy McKenna. Casting by Hannah Cooper, CSA. Music by Paul Leonard Morgan. Costume designer Carrie Hennessy. Editor Zemo Huang. Additional editing by Glenn Scantlebury, ACE. Production designer Patrick M. Sullivan Jr. Director of Photography Noble Jones. Associate producers Emma Shen Wong, Jacob Xiaofeng Li. Executive producers Jennifer Wengji Dong, Figo Li. Executive producers Avi S. Genesee, Joe Piro. Produced by Luke Rivette, PGA, Nicholas Bertelson, PGA. Produced by James Seamus, PGA, Tony Lipp. Written and directed by Noble Jones. The characters, entities, and incidents portrayed herein and the names used herein are fictitious, and any similarity to the name, character, or history of any person or entity is entirely coincidental and unintentional. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by the copyright and other applicable laws of the United States and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. The Tomorrow Man. Copyright 2018 Meridian Entertainment, Tomorrow Man, LLC. All rights reserved. This film has been described by Pixelogic Media with funding by Bleecker Street. Voice by Keith Caloris.